Gerard rarely left the BLI campus after he unofficially moved in with Course, but the one night in forever that he decided to take a walk was, of course, the one night he practically collided with Ray as he turned the corner back to the towers. Ray was apparently just leaving work, dressed in dark biking leathers and barely visible in the shadows of the promenade tunnels. They both jumped, and Ray immediately started stammering out an apology before recognizing Gerard and sputtering into silence. "Hello, Ray," he said. "You're working late. How are things down in robotics?"
"Fine," Ray said. "We miss seeing you every day," he blurted, like he couldn't help himself.
He probably couldn't. Ray was the most polite person Gerard knew.
"Mikey..."
He seemed to catch himself after that, and stopped.
"I probably shouldn't keep you," he added.
Gerard wasn't about to let it go.
"What about Mikey?"
he asked smoothly, hooking a thumb into his watch chain.
"Nothing,"
Ray muttered. Gerard was smiling, but his amusement faded quickly when Ray looked away and said nothing more.
Tell him I'm thinking of him. Gotta watch out for my little brother," he said.
He suddenly didn't care, didn't bother to hide the ominous tone. Let it be a warning to them. He was watching. Ray, to his credit, kept his face completely impassive. "See you around, Ray." When he let himself back into the unit offices, they were nearly deserted. Most of the analysts had left. Lights showed from under the night shifters' office doors, and a few Draks were still hanging around, though most had dispersed to their night shift posts around the campus. Gerard ignored them and went back to his own transmissions room. Shutting the door firmly behind him, he pulled his chair over to one of the network modules and typed in the anonymizer code he'd sweet-talked out of one of the systems techs. Just in case. Then he pulled up two employee files. Mikey's and Ray's. At first, both files were innocuous. Family information, work history, test scores. As Gerard continued to read, he stumbled across an encrypted section. He swore under his breath, running it through every decryption algorithm he had on his module, finally getting a hit after what was probably 5 or 6, but felt like 60, algorithms. Known associates was the heading for one. Activity record was another. The information within was spookily thorough. Preference in companions, leisure activities, disciplinary records, psychological profile. Gerard grimly scanned it all. Mikey's record was pretty basic. A little electronic flag on Ray's indicated further information. Gerard clicked it. It was one of the analyst's own tracker codes, which appended themselves to files that fit a search pattern. Ray had been busy these past few months. He was, in short, associating with the wrong people. People who could be traced back to incident reports, people who fit into a pattern of being noticed. People who had maybe been in the wrong place at the wrong time. Maybe not. A few searches later, and Gerard could definitively place him within several degrees of most of the recent incidents he himself had identified as part of a pattern. Shit. Before he could second-guess himself, he typed the sequence that would allow him to remove the marker on Ray's file. There were too many common markers between Ray's file and Mikey's, and Gerard refused to even take the chance that whatever he'd already set in motion would touch Mikey. He tapped a few keys and the screen blinked, reset. There was a chance, of course, that the anonymizer wouldn't work, but he told Mr. Anderson it was for one of Course's special projects. Course's name was enough to open most doors in the Scarecrow unit, as long as you knew how to find the weakest link. He pushed his chair back from his desk, then hesitated and slid back to the command module. He typed in the same set of codes and requests and keyed in another name. His own. His file was even cleaner than Mikey's arrays, for the most part, with one exception. A long section with the heading BLI Medical History. Gerard settled back into his chair and read. And read. And read. Until his blood curdled in his veins. Addiction to illegals, of course. Multiple sessions of hypnosis, that was a new one. Behavior modification successful. Enroll in BL Drugs version 2.0 test program. He kept reading. Dr. Slade's notes were in here. Those were mostly incomprehensible, or maybe he just wasn't interested in her efforts at head shrinking. His gut was churning with sudden apprehension. The last note in the section read, Version 2.0 Emotion Suppression Program successful. Scarecrow requests deferral from further participation in version 3.0 test program. Increase in memory modification side effects may be detrimental to subjects' cryptanalysis skills. Emotion suppression? Memory modification? Fuck. Gerard had known, he'd known that something felt off. He'd been on antidepressants before, a fucking lifetime ago. Hell, it had to have been before the wars. And they'd never made him feel like the BLI regimen had. He'd been so used to the booze and the fucking illegals that he hadn't remembered what it felt like to be actually functional. But a part of him had known, and Mikey had said, how many times had Mikey said, you're not the G I know? Gerard had brushed him off as a worrywart, as jealous, as delusional. No. All along, it had been him. Gerard cleared the memory log on his module and pushed away from the desk. He didn't know what to do. The walls of his office suddenly seemed to be holding back a bank of thunderheads. He didn't want to leave, to walk the halls outside. He didn't want to be on the BLI campus at all. He walked quickly to the elevators, head down. No one passed him, and he was glad. The walk between Tower A and Tower C was too short. It was a clear night, and the atmospheric grid sparkled faintly in spots like a second coating of stars. Gerard found himself stopped in the middle of a walkway, staring upward, and he quickly ducked his head and hurried into Cloud's lobby, slipping into an open elevator. Course was out when he let himself into the apartment, and Gerard didn't bother with lights, just went directly to the bathroom and pulled his pill bottle out of a drawer. It was weightless as ever, tiny rattling capsules cartoonishly perfect. But it looked like poison now, poison sitting in the palm of his hand. He had the sudden urge to turn on the taps, wash a flood of pills down the drain. He wrestled the cap off of the bottle, was actually reaching for the faucet when he stopped himself, tucking the bottle back against his chest. He couldn't throw them away. If nothing else, Course would notice. Course would ask. "So what?" he muttered out loud, frowning at his reflection in the bathroom mirror. "If he knew what they were doing to me?" "It's my choice." Except it wasn't, was it? He pictured his file. Scarecrow requests deferral. Emotion suppression successful. Further memory modification detrimental to cryptanalysis skills. If Scarecrow knew, Course knew. It was that simple. He flashed on the sleep pod, on Course's face as he said, "Good health, better living." He'd sounded so sure, like he actually believed it. Gerard, he'd wanted so desperately to get better, to be free of the vicious cycle of booze and uppers. BLI had done what they'd promised. They'd taken the pain away. They'd taken everything away, though, hadn't they? Because they found him fucking useful. When he wasn't useful anymore, would they just make him forget? How long until he couldn't remember his own brother, his own name? Not long. He hadn't seen his brother in what felt like forever, and the reminder suddenly sat like a hot brick in his gut. His fingers clamped tight around the pill bottle. He leaned heavily on the edge of the sink. "BLI thinks they can fix everything," Mikey had said. Gerard knew he should be angry right now. But he wasn't. They'd made sure of that. "I don't want to be fixed this way," Gerard told the bottle in his hand. "I can fix myself," he told his reflection. He tucked the bottle back in the drawer. 48 hours later, he was back in the bathroom, staring at his reflection again. His hair was snarled from tugging at it, his eyes rimmed in red, his skin pasty pale and sweaty-looking. The symptoms had started rolling in right about 12 hours after his first missed dose. First an itch, like dry skin, a gnawing pain in his stomach, shaking hands. And the emotions. If he'd thought he'd missed the emotions, now at 2 days out, he'd have cut off his right hand to make them go away again, because they were all coming, all at once, breaking over his head like waves. Gerard's knuckles were white from how hard he was clutching the edge of the sink. The pills were in the drawer. He knew they were there, could practically see them. He knew they'd make this go away. "Maybe you've got to make your own answers, not pop them in pill form." That was Mikey, talking in his head again. He bit his lip against the wave of regret. The most painful thing was the echo of disappointment in Mikey's voice. He slammed out of the bathroom and went to Course's office, to his home transmission setup. pulling up file after file after file on the BLI drug treatment program. Around 30 hours, Course came home and scared the shit out of Gerard as he sat flipping obsessively through channel after channel of surveillance, static, idle outpost chatter. He'd already wiped the command history of the unit, but he was sure Course would take one look at him and know. Instead, he just tugged Gerard up out of the chair and tugged his head back, dragging his tongue against Gerard's throat, pushing it insistently past his lips. He smelled of dust and dynamite. He didn't trust Course now. He abruptly realized, with the somewhat sweaty sheen of hard-won clarity, that he'd never trusted him, not really. But he wanted him. Fuck, did he ever want him? He was as viciously turned on as ever. More. Maybe it was just his overstimulated senses. Maybe he was just wired a little wrong. But he stretched out across the mattress, shouting as Course fingered him open and pressed in, swamped by lust, by loss of control, crying out in satisfaction into the bedsheets when Course shook apart over him, inside him. The withdrawal symptoms had faded a bit by the fourth day, but random surges and tremors still whispered over his skin like cobwebs, making Gerard seriously consider clawing his own face off. To make it even worse, he had to attend yet another interminable party. And when Course got called away at the last minute, literally they were walking out the door, to deal with some sort of situation across town, Gerard almost turned around. But he couldn't. Not in front of Course. He'd been able to hide them until now, but eventually Course would ask questions. The party was a bewildering mass of bodies. It wasn't in the towers, but at a private residence a few blocks away. Battery City's elite crowded the public rooms to convince themselves, each other, that they were important, that they were happy. It was such a fucking sham. Gerard could see it now. Taking a deep breath, Gerard rearranged his face into one of the expressions Course had perfected, a faintly knowing sneer. It would give him some breathing room. Gerard skirted the edges of the room, and only one person met his eyes for any length of time. He was an unfamiliar face, which was enough to make Gerard notice. He was like a void in the elaborate mental map connecting the rest of the faces in the room to names, jobs, and secrets. He was a small guy, dressed in head-to-toe nondescript black, but a face that fucking pretty wasn't exactly forgettable. But no one else in the room seemed to give him a second look. When they locked eyes, Gerard was jittering in place, surrounded by two manufacturing department heads and their blandly smiling wives, and the stranger's grimly amused expression shifted to an outright smirk. Gerard was caught by an unearthed flash of anger, punching through him like an electrical current. He didn't want to be here, and this stranger knew. "Fuck this fucking withdrawal," Gerard moaned internally. He couldn't keep himself from lifting his chin in silent disapproval. Who was this pretty black-haired boy to judge, to even fucking notice? He was sorry a moment later, when he caught a faint frown of concern flickering across one of the department head's faces. It was easy to forget that appearances were important to these people. Anger, regret, annoyance. It was like everything was 10 times stronger now. It had been so long since they'd had a chance to make their presence known. Gerard cut straight through the crowd, heading for the bathroom. It was clean and cool, dark and deserted, and the splashing of the water in the sink echoed off of the black marble surfaces as he ran the cold water for a long minute or two, touching wet fingertips to his throat, neck, temples. His skin felt tight to the touch. He closed his eyes, held on to the edge of the sink, and breathed. "How long has it been?" a voice asked from the direction of the door, and Gerard jerked in surprise, eyes flying up to land on the boy from before. "Have we met?" Gerard snapped, momentary shock bleeding into renewed annoyance. The boy, no, he was young, but definitely not a boy, not with a sarcastic smile like that, leaned back against the closed door and folded his arms over his chest. "Nope," he said casually. "Come on, you can tell me." Gerard wasn't sure how one person could walk the edge between snotty and genuinely curious so deftly, which was probably the only reason he didn't leave. That, and the fact that the guy was blocking the door. "Tell you what. How long you've been detoxing?" The guy raised an eyebrow at Gerard's evidently comical, shocked expression. Gerard frowned. He'd been so sure he'd been hiding it, if even Course hadn't noticed. "What makes you think—" "Please." The guy laughed, shoved his hands in his pockets. In that room of mannequins, they all take their pills on time, that's for fucking sure. And here you are now, and I just bet you're about ready to jump out of your skin, am I right?
He was. The fear was a new feeling, and it was winning, twisting frozen coils through his gut as the annoyance and boredom vanished. How do you know? And what do you care?
Just making conversation. Isn't that what you do at parties?
It's an unusual topic of conversation, Gerard said awkwardly. The guy winked.
I'm an unusual person. Oops, he said as the door rattled in its frame.
He steps aside to let an older man through the doorway.
Don't worry,
he stage whispered, leaning incrementally closer to Gerard.
I won't tell.
Another wink, then he was gone, leaving Gerard staring after him. By the time Gerard dodged the older man and got through the doorway himself, the boy in black had disappeared into the crowd. Gerard couldn't concentrate after that, eyes continually roving over the room, but the guy was as good as gone. Gerard was too unsettled to relax, and his perimeter stalking started again in earnest. It was how he spotted the faint traces of movement a half hour later. The doors leading to a small balcony were shut, a curtain pulled half over the panes of glass. His curiosity got the better of him, and Gerard was able to slip through unnoticed. At the click of the latch, a dark figure whirled and slid off the railing to face Gerard. It was him, the mobile planes of his face frozen, unexpectedly dangerous. When he saw Gerard, he smiled, but something around his eyes stayed dark. It was as different from before as black from white. A smirk couldn't cover it now, or maybe Gerard just couldn't unsee it, but the hint of violence struck some harmonic in him. "Enjoying the night air?" he asked smoothly, stepping close enough to box the stranger against the railing. Unexpectedly, the guy let out a startled-sounding giggle.
More than you know.
He seemed to get control of himself then, continuing.
You following me?
Let's call it an accident, Gerard replied. But now that I'm here, I guess I'll sneak a smoke. He fished out a carton of cigarettes, offering one to his companion. After a brief hesitation, he accepted, and Gerard offered a light. The guy's eyes shone for a moment in the flash of flame, studying Gerard again. Fuck, it had been so long since anyone but Course, had looked at him with even the hint of a challenge. Maybe he was conditioned. Maybe it was this guy's fucking gorgeous face. But the mood changed in the space between one breath and the next. Heavy, warm, subtly threatening in its sheer force. He'd missed the magnitude of this feeling, too. The uptick in his pulse and the rush of blood, all completely controlled and so, so addictive. "It's been 4 days," he said quietly, blowing a puff of smoke out of the corner of his mouth and eyeing the stranger through half-lidded eyes. "Cold turkey. Probably a fucking stupid thing to do."
"Brave,"
the guy responded, taking a drag of his own smoke and sneaking a look at Gerard out of the corners of his eyes. It was Gerard's turn to laugh.
"Hardly." "No, it was. I can respect that. I can't even tell you how glad I am to see—" "Fuck."
The guy cut himself off, suddenly agitated.
"Not yet, damn it."
He seemed to be talking to himself now, eyes drifting down into the side. Then, quick as lightning, he was in Gerard's face, grabbing his tie to pull him close and hissing,
"Do something for me without any questions. Please."
"What?"
"No questions. Just go back to the bathroom, okay? And wait. 5 minutes. Wait there. Please."
Gerard nodded, shocked into immobility when the guy yanked him even closer, mouth crushing against Gerard's with stunning thoroughness. Gerard, swamped with uncomprehending lust, obeyed blindly when the guy repeated,
"5 minutes. Go!"
and shoved him firmly in the direction of the balcony doors. He wasn't sure how he got into the black marble bathroom, or who he talked to along the way, but his pulse throbbed along with the ticking pocket watch in his hand as 5 minutes bled away. Waiting, wanting, craving that hot pink mouth and that fucking perfect face, drunk on the sheer amount of feeling coursing through him. Then the side of the building exploded. Gerard, safe in the marble-tiled bathroom, only heard the explosion, felt the walls shake, but hold. The wall sconces flickered, several shooting out a shower of sparks and dying. Fumbling his watch back into his pocket, he rushed out of the cave-like room, staring in horror at the wall of cracked and fragmented windows, the snow of glass on the floor.
People who had flung themselves away from the blast were crawling and staggering back to their feet. Outside the broken windows, lights were flickering or burnt out completely for blocks. Gerard was headed toward the balcony before he could stop himself, looking frantically for the guy in black. Then he slowed, stumbled to a stop. Fuck. He remembered the frantic insistence that Gerard go to the bathroom. Far away, protected, and the way the guy had been skulking around on the balcony beforehand. He stepped onto the balcony only to see their host frowning and prodding at a fuse box. He took a deep breath and stepped over the drift of broken glass, putting on his most authoritative face. He hadn't been with Corse for so long for nothing. "What's going on here?"
"Mr. Way," their host said nervously. "I called BLI. They're sending medics, and they said the Scarecrow unit was on its way, too."
"Understood. Until they get here, fill me in. I was out of the room."
"I don't know. There was a tiny explosion, and I was on my way to check it out. Got almost the whole way across the room when all of a sudden there was a giant fireball out here and everyone was screaming. This console, it's an emergency override panel for my power plant next door."
He gestured. The concrete building next door had fared even worse, a gaping hole in its side, sirens screaming and white-suited employees scampering.
When the lights started to go out, I immediately came to check, but I knew what had happened."
He stopped talking, and Gerard looked from the melted panel to the dark city streets branching out from their location. "I see," he said. And he did see. The nosy, unsettling, irreverent, fucking gorgeous stranger who'd sent Gerard panting to what he thought was an assignation, who'd sent him out of harm's way. He'd done this. Gerard had no proof, nothing but his own gut instinct, but he'd been relying on that for a long time now. He just didn't know what to do about it. He was still standing on the balcony, watching the lights flash at the power plant next door, when he heard a tense, "Gerard!" from behind him. He turned to see Corse striding through the room, heedless of the broken glass crunching under his boots. He had his hands on Gerard's face immediately, turning it from side to side.
"Are you hurt?"
Corse didn't usually touch him in public. Gerard thought numbly that this meant Corse had been worried. "I'm fine," he replied. "I was in another room."
"We're going to have to interview everyone," Corse said, "to see if anyone saw anything useful. I can get you in early so you can go home."
He let his hands slip down Gerard's chest to rest on his waist. "Okay," said Gerard, biting his lip. He hoped the shaking of his voice translated as residual shock and not nervousness. With one last squeeze to Gerard's waist, Corse strode away, snapping orders at the Drax filtering through the room. Gerard followed at a distance, unsure what to do. He wasn't field-trained, and he'd never seen this Corse before. This Corse was full of barely suppressed violence.
"Find the bombers and exterminate them, with extreme prejudice," Corse was telling his head Drac. "This has gone on long enough."
Gerard shivered. Saboteurs, here in the battery. Zone runners out in the desert. Different words for the same people, maybe? People, with careful code names, dressed to blend, staying out of sight and letting their actions do the talking. This was a private home. The security and surveillance, Gerard knew, would have gaps. They'd chosen their target well this time. If Gerard couldn't find the transmissions to track them down, he doubted anyone could. But he wasn't sure he wanted to, and that revelation was shocking enough that he stopped pacing, stared across the drift of broken glass. A cigarette butt lay smoking, abandoned, at his feet. He was still staring when the Scarecrow debriefing team made their way to him. It was Mr. Baum who was in charge, to his surprise. Then again, this was higher profile than a hijacked delivery convoy. Gerard was surprised to find that his residual dislike of the man flared immediately at the sight of him. He was immaculately dressed in a stuffy account manager suit, even given the late hour and the fact that he had probably been called in from his home.
"That room full of mannequins?"
he heard in the stranger's voice. It was true, Gerard realized. He'd had the same thought. This stranger had just dared to voice it. "He must have been watching me," Gerard realized. "He was watching me, and he knew I was a threat, and he distracted me." Instead of angering him, though, it brought a flare of respect.
"Mr. Way?"
Mr. Baum started, gesturing for Gerard to follow him to the dining room.
"It seems you are the only member of the Scarecrow unit in attendance tonight."
He sat in a carved dining chair, and waved Gerard into its twin. He glared out into the main rooms, where Kors was still directing a small army of Draks. There was bad blood there. The chairwoman gave Kors free rein to be as flamboyant as he liked, as long as he got results, and some of the other execs didn't like it. Therefore, they didn't like Gerard either. The look Mr. Baum fixed on Gerard was only incrementally less disapproving than the one on his face a moment before. It was the last straw. Gerard was torn in two. The old habitual need to give Kors whatever he wanted, and the newly revived desire to piss off this small, petty man. "I guess I was," Gerard prevaricated. "I don't know how much help I'll be. I'm just an analyst."
"I've seen your test results, Mr. Way. I know what your specialties are. You mean to tell me you saw no one? Nothing out of the ordinary tonight?"
"Nothing remarkable in any way," Gerard assured him, resisting the urge to curl his lip.
"Are you positive?"
Mr. Baum was turning pink, sounding strangled. "Never more positive," Gerard answered. The guy with the darkness in his eyes, the sarcastic smirk and the perfect mouth, he was so out of Gerard's frame of reference that he defied description. Mr. Baum and his suits, they had no concept of what it meant to be that alive. No one in this room did, except maybe... Gerard looked out at Kors and bit his lip nervously. Mr. Baum let him go with a disappointed grimace, and Gerard went, feeling both ashamed and exhilarated. Kors stopped near him, looked him up and down with an appraising eye, and turned to the nearest Drak.
"I'm done here. Call for me if something needs my attention before morning," he said imperiously.
Gerard followed him outside, pulse pounding in his head again. Kors's car was waiting, and he drove them both back to the towers. In the elevator, he pushed Gerard against the paneled wall and licked his way up Gerard's throat, fingers clamped tight around Gerard's upper arms.
"I leave you alone for one evening and find you in the middle of a bombing," he muttered, sounding half-choked.
"I don't think they meant to hurt anyone," Gerard stammered back, swallowing convulsively against the pressure on his neck. Kors pulled back and looked at him, black-eyed, too sharp, and Gerard quickly added, "I mean, whatever happened, it could have been an accident, right? And anyway, it could have been worse." He'd never seen Kors's eyes so pitilessly bleak.
"Yes, it could have been worse."
The elevator doors slid open soundlessly on their floor, and Kors steered him out, into the apartment, straight into the bedroom, not releasing the vice grip on Gerard's arm. "Kors?" he said quietly.
"It could have been worse," Kors repeated, letting go of Gerard's arm and yanking at the knot of his tie,
fumbling with the sleeves of his coat, the buttons of his shirt.
"Could have been..."
He went silent. Threads squeaked under his hands as he ripped at the fabric, and Gerard shuddered out an exhalation, standing still under Kors's hands until he needed to help, to step out of his pants and shoes. He stood in the middle of the room, naked, something ugly and alive and needy pulsing in the air between them, and he let Kors look his fill.
"I'm okay,"
Gerard said, holding his arms out to the sides, looking down his own pale, unmarked skin, practically glowing in the dark room. When Kors didn't respond, he sighed, stepping out of the little puddle of his clothing on the floor and crossing to the window wall. They were high enough up that the spiderweb grid of power outages was even more clearly visible. He followed it with his eyes, back to the hulking dark shape of the power plant, and wasn't expecting it when Kors stepped in and pinned him. He let out a strangled gasp when his bare chest and thighs impacted the cold glass, Kors hot as a furnace behind him, the fabric of his clothing pressing scratchily against Gerard's skin. Gerard's palms squeaked against the window as he braced himself, pushed backward. He wanted to back them up, angle them toward the bed, but Kors wouldn't allow it, his greater weight and leverage holding Gerard still.
"Like this,"
he growled, mouth trailing across Gerard's shoulders, the back of his neck.
"Just like this."
Gerard could feel Kors, hard where he was pressed against Gerard's ass, but he couldn't move beyond a few half-hearted twitches.
"Stay still,"
he muttered into Gerard's hair, one booted foot knocking Gerard's feet farther apart, one hand pulling Gerard's hips back into his. It made enough space for Kors to wrap his hand around Gerard's cock, coaxing him to full hardness with just a couple pulls. His body suddenly remembered being reeled in like a fish on a line, the taste of unfamiliar lips, how turned on he'd been just hours earlier, and Gerard moaned, half confusion, half plea. He was suddenly on edge, more than ready, and Corse, for once, seemed in no mood to tease. His free hand splayed over Gerard's stomach, fingers digging into the soft flesh there as he jacked Gerard with his other hand. Gerard's hand slipped once again, and he braced a forearm against the glass, leaning his forehead against it and squeezing his eyes shut against a swirl of vertigo. He reached down with his free hand, wrapping chilly fingers around Corse's, and as the double pressure brought him to the edge, he gasped, eyes flying open, cheek pressing against the window, watching the web of streets below as he came in hot spatters over their fists and against the glass. It didn't feel like enough, even as the tension uncoiled from his spine, even as he slumped in Corse's grip and sprawled where he landed when Corse steered him toward the bed. There was something unblinking, reptilian, in Corse's stare. He fumbled with the fastenings of his own clothes as he'd fumbled at Gerard's earlier, but when Gerard went to push himself up and reach for them, something in his black gaze kept Gerard still, a renewed curl of adrenaline setting his heart thumping like a scared bunny. Corse was on the bed as soon as the last piece of clothing hit the floor, reaching for lube and pushing Gerard's thighs apart, prepping him roughly and pushing in, almost too fast. Gerard's back arched off the bed, the stretch and burn skirting the edge of actual pain, and he clamped his fingers around two handfuls of the bed sheets and tipped his head back against the mattress, eyes squeezed shut. He hauled in a huge breath and held it, shudders racing across his oversensitized skin everywhere their bodies touched. Corse was uncharacteristically silent, his uneven breathing the only sound besides the slap of their bodies colliding, the near-soundless slither of skin against the sheets. His groan when he finally shook apart startled Gerard. He echoed it with his own shuddering gasp as he realized how long he'd been holding his breath. Gerard's fingers cramped when he let go of his double handful of bedding. He slid his open palms back and forth across the cool fabric, feeling trickles of sweat creep down the nape of his neck, choking back a little hiss as Corse pulled out. He rolled over, overused muscles twinging as he stretched. He waited for the mattress beside him to dip under Corse's weight. He seldom allowed himself to fall asleep in the bed with Gerard there, but he often would lay and pet Gerard's skin, hair, for what felt like hours. Tonight, though, he just stood up and started gathering his clothing in silence. Gerard pushed himself into a sitting position, feeling vaguely nauseous. "Where are you going?"
"To sleep," Corse said shortly.
"In the pod? Stay here, Corse. You don't have to—"
"Gerard."
His tone was meant to intimidate, but Gerard ignored it. "Please." Gerard got to his knees on the mattress, reached out and tugged at the bundle of fabric in Corse's hands. His expression was opaque, but Gerard didn't back down, and eventually he let the clothing fall to the floor and settled onto the bed next to Gerard. Exhaustion was creeping up on Gerard with every moment he stayed still, and the scent of Corse's skin curled around Gerard from his body, his bedsheets. Corse never moved. Their bodies never touched. But Gerard started to drift off anyway. He woke, several hours later, to the sound of Corse's voice muttering about bombs.
"Dead, dead, they're all dead, General."
At least, that was what it sounded like. Gerard sat up, leaned over the curve of Corse's back, and set a hand on his shoulder. An instant later, fireworks exploded in Gerard's vision as his head impacted against the wall of glass, Corse's hands around his neck, his eyes full of unseeing rage. He tugged, scratched at the hands gripping his throat and squeezing, croaking with the air left in his lungs.
"Corse, Corse, please don't!"
He didn't seem to hear. The last of Gerard's breath was rattling in his throat, and his vision was going blacker on the edges, when Corse seemed to snap back into focus, shoving Gerard as far away from him as the mattress allowed. Gerard slumped where he'd fallen, hair hanging down over his face, swaying with every painful, gusting breath. When he'd gathered enough oxygen to fill his lungs and clear his swimming vision, Corse was still sitting frozen, staring with an expression of mingled anger and horror. Then he turned his back on Gerard, leaning over to rummage through the discarded clothing on the floor.
"Corse, what?"
It hurt to talk. Gerard's voice sounded like someone had taken razor blades to his vocal cords, and still he was being ignored. He grabbed for Corse's shoulder. Corse threw him off.
"This is why," he gritted, "I use the sleep pod."
He was up and moving before the sentence was out, shrugging his shirt on as he strode through the dark apartment to the room with the sleep treatment set up. Gerard followed, not bothering with clothes of his own.
"You haven't exactly bothered to explain," Gerard snapped back.
Kors started punching at a set of keys, back still turned.
You never bother to explain anything. I guess that's how fucking special I really am.
Kors turned around.
You are special. You're still alive.
His expression was terrifying in its matter-of-factness. Gerard took a step back before he could stop himself. Kors handed him the emergency override controller.
I set it for 4 sleep cycles.
Gerard took the metal box automatically.
You can't just...
Yes, I can.
Kors stepped into the cylinder and slammed the hatch. When the gases stopped swirling, his body was already slumped into the upright but relaxed posture of stasis. Gerard stared for a moment at his immobile face, then turned and stalked back to the bedroom. His own face looked back at him from the dressing table mirror. He was pale as death, red bruises blooming from the skin of his throat. The override controller was still clenched in his hand. Gerard looked down at his hand, and then pitched the little metal box with all his strength into the mirror. With a sharp crack, the mirror shivered into a funhouse halo around his frozen face. He had 6 hours. 6 hours before he had to deal with Kors, with the rest of Scarecrow, with whatever was going on out there. He spent most of the first one pacing aimlessly around the apartment, his head throbbing where it had cracked against the window, his throat burning. He smoked through half a pack of cigarettes, heedless of the fact that Kors hated it when he did it in the apartment. He spent 2 more of them rifling through every drawer in the apartment. He didn't actually expect to find anything worthwhile, which was why he nearly missed the stack of data storage disks. He popped one into the module. It was, unsurprisingly, encrypted. The only thing that was surprising was how easy it was to break the code. He told himself not to look when the line of files scrolled down his screen, when he could see what they were. Copies of Kors's personal files. Gerard laughed. What the hell? He muttered to himself. He'd already looked at my keys, at Ray's, at his own. He opened the first one and started reading. Within a few paragraphs, the sardonic little smile had slipped from his face. It was military records. Maybe Gerard should have guessed, after what had just happened, that Kors was a veteran. He was certainly the right age. But the thought had honestly never crossed his mind. Reading further, it was clear that Kors had not only served, he'd been an officer. Reading further... Gerard stopped, stared at the screen for a few minutes, closed the file quietly. Everyone in the city over a certain age remembered the Helium Wars, but if you asked, no one would talk about it. No one would ever ask, either. Gerard corrected himself with a bitter little chuckle. Maybe they didn't even remember at this point. If Gerard could forget, he would. He cast a single involuntary glance toward the bathroom, where the little pill bottle still sat. No. He didn't look at the rest of the folders either, just ejected the disk and put it back with its mates. Closing down the module, he went and stood in the doorway of the sleep treatment room. The collateral damage from the wars had practically obliterated an already blasted landscape and a decimated population. Gerard and Mikey weren't the only ones to lose parents, children, lovers, friends. Gerard had only escaped the eventual draft because he'd had to take care of Mikey. Then there had been Battery City, be a lie to keep them safe, keep smiling on every flat surface. "What did you see?" he asked Kors's motionless figure. "What did you do?" There was no answer, of course. Just Kors suspended in BLI's patented dreamless sleep. Gerard didn't know what to do. A glance at the time told him it was close enough to call it morning. So he hadn't slept. So what? It wouldn't be the first time. He went back into the bedroom. Skirting the fallen controller, he pulled his suit back on, tied his tie without the aid of the cracked mirror, and let himself out of the apartment. The frequencies would still be there. They never slept either. A file folder hit Gerard's desk with a smack, startling him out of his glazed-over study of the surveillance feeds for the warehouse district. It was banded in yellow, Scarecrow's color code for top-level eyes only. Yellow files were way over Gerard's pay grade. He looked up. Kors was standing over him, hands still raised. "Run an analysis," he snapped, then stalked out without another word. It was the first time Gerard had laid eyes on him since the bombing, since after the bombing at the apartment. Gerard had known he was in the office, There was a sort of low-level buzz that started whenever Corse walked in the door. But they'd stayed away from each other. On Gerard's part, it was intentional. He was wary of Corse now. Not physically, but in a way that had never occurred to him before. It was suddenly clear how little he really knew about him. Gerard wasn't sure why Corse had stayed away from him. He tugged the folder closer, fingering the tape seal holding it closed. He knew for a fact that he shouldn't be looking at this, and he had no idea why Corse had given it to him, only that with his current mood, Gerard wasn't about to ask. He broke the tape and flipped the front cover open. It wasn't horrible, not right away. Just a list of places, dates, drac patrols. Most of them had been on the list he'd handed Corse weeks earlier. But as Gerard started flipping pages, it got worse. Incident write-ups, evidence lists, interrogation transcripts, and then the pictures started. Mug shots, autopsy photos. The first one of those that Gerard came across, he nearly dropped the file. As it was, he slammed it shut and dropped his head into his hands for a while. This was Scarecrow, he thought to himself, not the transmissions hissing through his speakers or the codes running across his screens. This. Toneless injury reports, bodies on sterile steel. This was Corse, coming home from this to his beautiful black and gray apartment. To Gerard. Fingers numb, Gerard started typing, calling up his saved search string and inputting the new data from the yellow file. Whatever God had blasted California, here was his hand again. Gerard could see the pattern. A fan kicked on somewhere in the bowels of the console. Gerard watched names and places scroll down the screen as the machine ran correlations. He'd been at it for nearly the whole day, forgetting to eat, to drink. The sound of the door opening startled him right out of his seat. He stood still, swaying a little, panting quietly. "Anything?" Corse asked him, no trace of his previous temper showing. Gerard looked involuntarily at the stack of papers on the desk behind him. Corse just gathered it in the yellow folder. Gerard squeezed his eyes shut as Corse edged by, but all he felt was a brush of dry lips across his forehead. He shivered. "Go home and get some rest," Corse told him. "We need you sharp." Each morning there was a different yellow folder on his desk. It didn't get any better. Finally, he caught Corse leaving one morning. He had been out of the office the past 2 days. Gerard pushed the folder back into Corse's chest before he could leave. "Why?" he said insistently.
"Why?"
Corse echoed, like he was actually confused. "Why are you showing me these things? You know I don't have clearance. You know I—" Gerard cut himself off.
"I'm sorry," Corse said evenly, tucking the folder back under his arm. "This is what we do, Gerard. We fix things. We make them better. You're the best I have. I thought you'd want to help."
Corse leaned in and kissed him, one hand tugging gently at a lock of Gerard's hair.
"I..."
Gerard bit his lip, shaking his head. Their eyes met. Corse's expression smoothed into something cool and remote.
"Well, I'm sure I can find someone else if you're... not able," he said.
And he left. He didn't come home that night either, and Gerard sat alone in the sitting room of the apartment, listening to the radio. It was a massive pre-war set. In fact, Gerard was sure it dated to before. How it had survived, how Corse had found it, how he'd afforded it, Gerard had no idea. He'd never even seen Corse turn it on. Gerard sat on the floor next to a speaker, head leaning against the buzzing cabinet and one hand on the control knob, spinning and spinning and spinning through bossa novas and philharmonics and station after station of static. That's where he heard it, up in the stratosphere, the top of the broadcast channels. BLI brand radio dials didn't even go that high. At first it was no different than the flickering hiss of static he'd been listening to down the dial. Then he heard it, the squeal of an electric guitar, and he stopped and stared. The motherfucking Stooges! He'd forgotten what they sounded like. How could he have forgotten? It was like being sprayed with a fire hose. The sheer fucking sound. He huddled up close to the speaker, feeling the bass in his chest cavity. Iggy screaming, "Search and destroy." He closed his eyes. Then, too soon, a voice cut in.
"And that one goes out to Fungul, wherever you are. You see Fungul on the streets, tumbleweeds, ask him what's black and white and red all over. He'll tell you. That brings my hour to an end, but before we say goodnight, here's one more by request. This one goes out to everybody's kid brother. Got a little Morrissey and the Smiths in the house. Please, please, please let me get what I want. On that note, motor babies, sweet dreams.
Gerard sat with his cheek pressed against the stereo until the sound faded, with a scratchy version of the Star-Spangled Banner coughed into the silence. He stared at the radio dial until the needle position was burned into his brain. 109. 109. 109. Who was that? How was he broadcasting? Where was he broadcasting from? How had BLI not found him yet? With a forceful turn of the radio dial, Gerard sent the stereo screaming back down into the BLI broadcast channels. Then he killed the power, picked himself off the floor, and walked out of the apartment. He'd put this off too long. He needed to see his kid brother. The apartment was locked, which it had never been during Gerard's drunken heyday. But he still had his keys. Mikey hadn't changed the locks. Gerard knew he wouldn't. He let himself in. Mikey was on the couch with Ray, both their heads turned warily toward the door. Gerard scanned the room. It was just the two of them, and a quiet hissing sound proved to be the beat-up mini boombox Mikey'd had since childhood, sitting on a table in front of them. Gerard walked over and picked it up, then twisted the dial to turn the volume down. 109. Of course you'd be listening to. I don't even know how I found it, but... Mikey, it's our music. Like, before. And I heard Mikey. I fucking heard the Smiths, and... I'm so fucking sorry I let it go this long, but I need you to... Please tell me what's going on. Gerard. Mikey started, but hesitated as he looked toward Ray. Ray looked down. Gerard just kept staring. I can't, Mikey said finally. Why not? Why do you think? Mikey asked miserably. Gerard, I know you're not stupid. Don't make me do this. No, said Gerard. No, I am going to make you do this, because I don't know how long I can keep covering for you. I can only go into your files, both of your files, and fucking delete things so many times, Mikey Way, before someone notices. Tell me, just tell me it's fucking worth it. Mikey started to talk, but Ray talked right over him. What do you mean, deleting things? Gerard had never seen such a hard expression on Ray's usually affable face. Gerard glared right back. Someone, and let's just say this is a big surprise to all three of us in this room, okay? Has been sabotaging BLI operations for months. Do you think that no one in the Scarecrow unit has noticed? What exactly do you think I do, Ray Toro?
I don't... Mikey didn't...
Ray had gone about as pale as his... tanned, Gerard noticed. Complexion would let him. I told you, Toro. I told you weeks ago that I was watching. Just what did you think I meant? Ray flushed. Apparently, he'd thought it meant something different. Gerard shot a look at Mikey, who was watching the two of them, and met Gerard's eyes with a little smirk. We'll talk about that later, Gerard told Mikey. I am still your big brother. But first... Yes, motherfuckers, you'd be getting a lot more attention right now if it wasn't for me. Especially you, he said to Ray.
Why would you do that? Ray asked.
Because of Mikey? Because you're the only family I have left, and that's why I'm asking you to tell me just what the fuck I am sticking my neck out for. Mikey still looked sullen.
No one asked you to stick your neck out.
Too fucking bad. Gerard sat on the edge of the coffee table, shoved the boombox into Ray's hands. Tell me. No one said anything for a moment. Gerard looked back and forth between them, finally locking on Mikey's eyes and staring. Not even blinking.
You're different, Mikey said, finally, sounding suspicious.
You told me that before, Mikey. Shit, that's why I left. And you were right. I was different. It was the pills they gave me. I hacked the personnel files, and I found my medical records, and... They do things to you, to your emotions, to your memories. Things they don't tell you about. I haven't taken one since.
We know about that, Ray interjected. Other people have... If you stop taking them for any reason, you realize soon enough. It's...
Enough to make you crazy? Gerard finished. Yeah. 4 days after I did it, the building I was in fucking exploded, and I let the guy who did it get away. That got their attention. He had two pairs of eyes focused on him unblinkingly. "Friend of yours?" Ray raked a hand through his massive curls. "Back up, Gerard, please. Scarecrow knows? They don't know anything really useful, not yet. Not if I keep doctoring the files." He leaned forward, put a hand on Ray's knee. "I know you're tangled up in this, Ray. You're still clean, but that's not going to last for long. So tell me what I'm protecting." "This," Ray said simply, handing the boombox back to him.
"Freedom."
"Freedom?" Gerard echoed.
"Free speech. No corporate control. How long have you been at BLI now, Gerard? I've been there a lot longer. Mikey, too. Is that what you want for the rest of your life? Clean and safe? And dull? Dull as death. Do you know what we're working on in robotics now, Gerard? Retinal implants. Do you want BLI to be able to tell you what to see and feel? We don't."
"Who's we?" Even as he asked, he saw their faces. The mug shots the corpses Course had put in front of him. The ones who'd resisted. And failed. The ones who'd been caught in the crossfire. "Is it worth dying for?" Gerard asked.
"We're all dying a little every day," Ray said. "Until BLI finds a way to take that away from us, too. The aftermath is secondary, right?"
"The sabotage, that's one thing, but the bombing?"
"They're not trying to hurt anyone," Ray said. "Just shake things up. Give people something that they can't ignore, that BLI can't erase."
He paused.
"You were there the other night?"
"Yes," Gerard said coolly.
"Were you?"
After a moment, Ray shook his head. Gerard looked over at Mikey.
"No," Mikey said quietly. "You said you met the guy, the one who did it?"
Gerard thought back to a small figure crouched on a dark balcony.
"Pretty sure." "And you didn't tell them?"
Mikey asked. Gerard shook his head.
"Why?"
"Because he made me feel like feeling was worth it," Gerard thought, but he just shrugged. "No proof. If there would have been any, I wouldn't have been able to ignore it."
"Maybe."
Ray looked up from his study of his clasped hands.
"I know we don't really have any right to ask this, but..."
"You want me to keep ignoring it?" Gerard finished, raising his eyebrows at Ray. Ray nodded.
"Just for a little while," Mikey spoke up. "Gee, we're trying to get out of the city. There are a lot of people who want out, just want to go somewhere where they can live by their own rules. We just need..."
He looked at Ray.
"Time. Breathing room. Scarecrow off our backs."
Ray looked up at Gerard. Gerard was still stuck on Mikey's statement.
"Out of the city? And go where? Not..." "There are more people than you think out in the zones," Ray said. "Plenty of room to run. Plenty of places to hide."
"But you'd still be running. And hiding from Scarecrow."
"Better to move than to stand still. Better to have the choice."
"You don't have to commit now," Ray said. "But, Gerard, I don't want to be like this, but..." "I'm not going to rat you out, Toro. I'm not going to rat out my own brother. I still don't know how I feel about all this, but give me some credit."
They all fell silent. Gerard studied the tips of his boots for a while, scuffs still marking the leather from wading through the broken glass at the power magnet's house. Mikey shuffled around the living room for a few minutes, then returned and perched next to Gerard on the coffee table, warm where his arm pressed up against Gerard's side.
"Here," he said. "Listen."
He handed Gerard a pair of headphones. The cord snaked across the room to Mikey's turntable. Gerard watched the black disc spin for a moment before sliding them on. At the first lick of guitars, he started grinning, and he was still smiling when he tipped his head down to lean against Mikey's shoulder. Mikey was still as bony as he'd been as a gangly teenager, but Gerard didn't mind. Gerard went straight back to the office. Course's cool and disappointed voice was still ringing in his ears, and Gerard fucking knew from experience that when Course cut you out, you stayed out. He had to make up for his earlier behavior if he wanted access to those files. And he was sure he'd need access to those files if he wanted to have the ghost of a chance to get Mikey and Ray and their friends out. He found Course in his office, talking to one of his head dracs. He waited in the doorway until the masked figure left, then let himself in and closed the door. Course didn't look up until he heard the door click shut, and when he saw who it was, he pushed back from his desk and crossed his arms.
"Gerard?"
"I'm sorry," Gerard said, crossing the office and leaning up against the edge of Course's desk. I got scared. Every time I remembered... I could have died, he said finally, dropping to his knees and leaning his cheek against Course's thigh, looking up wide-eyed from under messy strands of black hair. If I'd been out on that balcony, I don't want to be blown the fuck up, Course. He felt fingers push through his hair, stroking through the strands a few times before Course spoke.
I knew you weren't ready, he said finally. But you, Gerard, you have so much potential. It can be ugly, what we do, but it's for the greater good. We keep the city safe, the city keeps working, and everyone's happy.
Because they're drugged until they can't be anything else, Gerard thought, but did not say. He closed his eyes, sitting motionless under Course's hand. Finally, he felt a tug on his hair, Course pulling his head up to look him in the eye.
I was disappointed, Course said in a noncommittal voice. But if you're sorry...
His thumb traced across Gerard's cheekbone, hooked gently in the corner of his mouth.
Prove it, his eyes said.
Gerard shuddered, giving himself just a moment to hate how much he still wanted this. Then he licked his lips and reached for Course's belt. It was enough. Enough to keep him where he needed to be, at the top of the food chain, doing his job. Or not doing his job. It actually hurt, a little, to pay so much attention to the people behind the transmissions and see their petty abuses of power that he had to let slide. But every missing link meant a broken chain that would maybe keep his brother safe. I don't know who your people are at the packaging plant, he told Mikey over a cup of coffee at a dingy delicatessen a few crucial blocks from the BLI campus, or if they're actually yours, but they need a new broadcast frequency. Probably a new code. I'm going to have to ping it soon.
Do it, Mikey said. We've got a backup in the supply chain. Ray says we need to divert attention from the power plant up at the reservoir.
Shit, Mikey, I told you. Drag patrols in that sector have been doubled ever since you took out the plant here in the city.
Mikey nodded. Like I said, we need to divert attention.
What are you going to do? Oh, fuck, the grid generators.
Ray designed the perpetual motion mechanisms for the latest upgrade. He knows how they work. If we can get them to go on the blink long enough, we can get people out of the tunnels while the Drax are rushing back to the reservoir.
Mikey looked grim. Gerard was only starting to understand the amount of coordination this mysterious group of friends had put into this. Gerard nodded.
All right. I'll see what I can do.
How long do I have?
Until you leave, he didn't say.
Mikey met his eyes. He understood anyway.
A week.
He took a swig of the last dregs of his coffee, pulled the hood of his jacket up over his head.
Gerard, why won't you... I don't understand why...
Someone has to make sure Scarecrow stays off your backs, Gerard said. He was picturing the last surveillance feed he'd watched before leaving the office. A lone troublemaker, probably not a day over 16, armed only with a bag of spray paint cans. How he'd run when the Drac Patrol spotted him, darting like a rabbit through the warren of warehouse alleys on one of the shabbier edges of the city. Run, Gerard had told the screen. He'd switched feeds before he saw if the Drax caught up. He didn't want to know.
You said it yourself. If we can't stay under the radar for long, how can you?
Let me worry about that, Mikey. Mikey wouldn't stop worrying. Gerard knew that. Gerard just couldn't make any promises. Gerard caught three more broadcasts by the mysterious DJ. He'd figured out the sequence the man, Dr. Death-Defying, he called himself, used to piggyback around the airwaves after just two more, and was waiting by the ancient radio at the next appointed time, leaning against the cabinet with one nervous eye on the door. And fuck, the music! Gerard could feel it in every part of him. If people just knew, if they could feel this, things would be so different, he knew it. Course came home later, letting himself into the apartment quietly. Gerard heard the door open. The radio was already turned off, but Gerard was still sitting on the floor, propped up against the sitting room wall. He turned his head to the side to look up at Course when he stopped in the doorway. Gerard felt languid, drained, and he still had another day of watching, listening, and waiting. Ever since he'd capitulated, Several new autopsy files had crossed his desk. He'd seen Corse, cool and unruffled, shoot one of them personally. At the time, Gerard had been watching the grainy feed for the same shabby warehouse district where he had watched the Drax chase down the scared bunny, noting where the boy's graffitied scrawls had already been covered with sterile white. Each time a new yellow folder had arrived, Gerard had quietly and discreetly been sick in the bathroom once he'd checked to make sure he didn't recognize the face. He wasn't sure how much longer he could hold on. The Drax didn't usually shoot to kill, but they'd been retrained, it seemed, after the power plant bombing. Gerard was absolutely unsurprised by Corse's potential for violence, but every time he replayed that moment in the alley in his mind, the crumpled figure in the alley took on Mikey's face, and he couldn't breathe. Now Corse was looking down at him, his face wearing the particular expression of mingled fondness and scrutiny that he saved for Gerard. "Are you quite comfortable?" he asked, with a curl of curiosity in his voice. "I'm fine," Gerard said, evasive. Corse reached down and offered a hand. When Gerard took it, Corse pulled him to his feet, wrapping his other arm around Gerard's waist when he stumbled a little. He backed up a few steps and sat on one of the nearby armchairs, tugging Gerard down onto his lap. Gerard grabbed onto the padded armrests, kneeling up and bracketing Corse's chest with his arms. He stared for a moment at the familiar face, sharp slashes of lips and cheekbones, opaque black eyes. What he had. It was too harsh to be called charisma, but he was magnetic. Even the cruel light in his eyes was somehow irresistible. "What are you thinking?" Corse asked him, deceptively lazy. He ran his thumb over Gerard's lips, wrapped a hand around the side of Gerard's neck where the pulse was thundering. "You'll break me if I stay." He knew it like he knew his own name. "I'm just tired," he told Corse quietly. "I'm tired of everything." "You need a sleep treatment," Corse told him. "At least 6 cycles. Stop being so stubborn." There was really little doubt that it was an order. Gerard wet his lips nervously, looked out from behind his messy hair. You know it makes me nervous. Maybe, can I take it here, with you there?" He let his lips fall open slightly, looking frightened, waiting. Fuck, he was frightened. The idea that had just flashed into his head. It would either work, or he'd be dead. Gerard was in the office at dawn, watching the first dominoes of the resistance fighters' plan tumble slowly. Whoever was in charge had an impeccable sense of timing. Incidents came across Gerard's transmission module at intervals that appeared nearly random, like a piano just off tempo, just off key. Corse had been in and out of the command center 4 times in the first several hours of the day, looking more coolly furious each time. Gerard kept his head down to hide his smile. It was stupid of him, he was sure, but somewhere along the line this had taken on the timbre of a game. A fucking deadly game, but a game nonetheless. He watched his screens, ran his reports, and every once in a while inserted a tiny little worm of code into the outgoing frequencies. Somewhere along the line, maybe, with the right sequence, they would send the transmission system staggering. Every blind eye was a chance for another body to hide. He had no way to get word to Mikey or Ray. All incoming and outgoing transmissions from the BLI campus were monitored. Well, all transmissions were monitored, but the official BLI channels from the tactically important offices were monitored more carefully, and that was a different department than his. But feeding Mikey intel wasn't his job. Keeping the Drax away was. The symphony of incidents was nearly at a crescendo by late afternoon, and Gerard knew the finale would be coming soon. The sabotage at the grid generator plant. Several saboteurs had been captured at different locations around the city throughout the afternoon hours. Gerard knew because he'd been monitoring the security cams during at least one of them. And Corse was pacing up and down the main hallway. Had been for an hour at least. Drac feet scurried faster with each barked order. Gerard knew, then, that he had no real choice. He had to get Corse out of the office, out of commission. Gerard scrubbed his palms over his face and took a few deep breaths. Showtime. He stood up and picked up his coffee cup, chipped stoneware emblazoned with BLI's mouse cat cartoon. Moving to his doorway, he scanned the hallway. Corse speaking to someone in another office, Drax rushing to and fro. Stepping out into the stream of motion, he let himself stagger, rebound off a drac, and get his feet tangled in the boots of another until he lost his balance and crashed to the ground. His coffee cup shattered against the wall. Half the mouse cat head stared up at him, and he stared back, shaking his head slowly back and forth. Course was at his side immediately. "Gerard, what is it?" he said, brushing off the dracs who were fumbling to get Gerard to his feet and holding him with a firm grip on his forearm.
"I don't..."
Gerard started slowly, calling up all his years of drinking for the proper tone. He looked down at his hand, where he still clutched the mug handle.
"I'm just so tired."
"Go home. Sleep. Good health."
"Better living. You said you'd stay with me. I need you."
"Gerard."
Course looked pained. It had worked before. Gerard's transparent distress after the bombing had pulled him away. If anything, Gerard was more frantic now. "Mikey, Mikey, Mikey, Mikey," running through his mind on a constant loop.
"Give me 5 minutes," he said finally. "I'll meet you there."
Gerard was already in the room, fiddling with the pod settings, when Course walked in, and he looked up and smiled nervously.
"You said 6 cycles? How long is that?"
"About 9 hours. But, Gerard, don't worry about that."
Course pulled Gerard close, stroked the backs of his fingers down Gerard's cheek.
"The treatment will help you rest, forget whatever it is that's bothering you. You'll forget."
"That's what's bothering me,"
Gerard thought. He curled his arms around Course's waist, pulling him close, kissing him suddenly, passionately, and with such force that they both swayed off balance. Gerard planted his back foot and shoved with all his strength, sending Course staggering into the open tube as Gerard went scrabbling for the door handle. The portal hissed with sudden pressurization just as the full weight of Course's body hit it from the other side.
"I won't forget who I am!" Gerard yelled through the glass at Course's furious face. "And you never knew!"
He darted away and slapped the buttons on the panel to start the gases. 9 hours to run away from here. Leaving the motionless form trapped in stasis in the glass tube, Gerard left the apartment without looking back. He took only 2 things with him. His face in the mirrored elevator panels didn't look scared anymore. He rode in silence, alone, down to the subterranean garage, where he found the car that went with Course's keys clutched tight in his right hand. The pod override controller in his left crunched under the tires as he peeled out of the garage. Gerard hadn't driven a car in years, but it turned out it wasn't something you forgot so easily. The car wrapped around him like a lover. Apropos, and a little ironic, considering its owner. His thumb rubbed the Firebird logo on the steering wheel. Mikey, where was Mikey? It had never occurred to Gerard that he wouldn't be able to find his brother. He looked toward the generator plant in the distance, looking out through the T-tops as the artificial grid flickered visibly in the darkening sky. In the distance, something greenish whirled. Poison gases? A mini-tornado? Who knew? He was getting out of here, and then he'd find Mikey. Gerard squealed out of the BLI complex and pointed the Trans Am's headlights toward the tunnels. Laser beams flickered in the falling dusk as Gerard approached the tunnels. A lone siren screamed. A single unit, 4 white-suited dracs, was holding down the mouth of the tunnel, firing on a group of mismatched figures huddling behind some concrete pylons. Gerard fishtailed the car to a stop in the line of fire. Lasers hissed and spat off the surface of the car as Gerard opened the driver's side door and leaned out, low to the ground.
"Get in!" he shouted.
None of them moved for a second, and Gerard was just starting to feel absolutely fucking terrified when a disbelieving voice shouted,
"Gee?"
It was Mikey, slinking up along the retaining wall.
"Yes, it's me! Let's fucking go!"
Mikey reached the other figures and said something inaudible. Whatever it was, it got them moving, and soon he had 4 bodies tumbling into the car.
"Hold on tight!"
he yelled and gunned the engine, all 500 horses screaming as he shot into the tunnel and straight through the wooden turnstile gate. Gerard stole a glance into the passenger seat once they were clear of the city. His passengers in the back seat were hanging out the open windows, sighting down the barrels of their ray guns for pursuers. Mikey was slumped next to him. 1 shoulder of his jacket looked scorched, and he was covered with dust, but his expression... He looked exhilarated, fucking astonished, and Gerard bit back a grin.
"You stole his fucking car?"
Mikey yelled over the roar of the engine.
"Can't slow down now,"
Gerard yelled back.
"So, where are we going?"
Mikey burst into a full-throated, delighted laugh.
"Wherever we want," he said,
and Gerard just grinned and punched the accelerator.